Hello there, listeners, and thank you for tuning in to the 10th episode of One Song. Our guest today is Mr. Dave Depper, who is a dear old friend of mine from Portland, Oregon. Dave and I used to share the stage a lot in various different projects back when I was 18, 19 years old, and Dave always cracked me up. He's such a funny, wonderful guy. And he's always up to something interesting with his music, with all the different bands he's played in over the years and all the different solo projects he's done. Today we're going to talk about the song Monkberry Moon Delight, which was originally written by Paul McCartney, but Dave has a special story with that song, which we'll get into now. So enjoy.
What is a song?
Where do songs come from?
What is the life of a song?
How much can a song morph and change before it becomes something else entirely?
What is the essence of one song?
I wish I had some of those plug-in effects on my end.
That's what everybody says.
So sweet. Is that an actual space echo over there?
No, I've got like a small little mixer that has, you know, okay, effects built into it. And so I just, yep. But yeah, it's good. It's good for a little laugh. But I have three introductory questions for you, sir. Those are... How many years have you been on this earth? Where in the world are you now? And could you please tell me about the last meal that you ate?
Okay. I am 40 years old, unbelievably. I'm turning 41, which is disturbing, but we don't need to dwell on that. I'm at home in Portland, Oregon, which is where you and I met. And for breakfast, I had some scrambled eggs on toast with a little fresh dill chopped up and put on top.
Ooh,
it was great.
Dang.
Yeah.
The last few.
I know how to live.
Yeah. The last few of these I've done were all with West Coast America people. So everyone had just had breakfast. But, you know, sometimes that question gets answered with dinner instead. But I had someone write to me and tell me it's very illuminating to hear what musicians eat.
Is there any sort of breakdown, at least in the breakfast data, of like sweet versus savory breakfast eaters? What would you say? Any trends?
Well, so far in this little project, it's mostly savory, I'd say. One guy had had apple with cheese, which we kind of talked about for a while, and how the Europeans are more accustomed to putting cheese with like sweet stuff, like, you know, jams and stuff. But yeah, savory mostly. I'm more of a savory person myself, but I do love the occasional sweet breakfast.
Yes. If I'm training for a marathon right now, and on long run days, I will indulge myself even sometimes in pancakes before the run. But
brilliant.
Granola, at the very least granola.
Yeah.
With lots of maple syrup on it.
Well, now that I'm helping raise a boy, like, we make pancakes like once a week. I hope you had pancakes once a week growing up, or pancakes or waffles.
Definitely. Yeah. We had a waffle iron. It was definitely like Sunday was sweet breakfast day. Yeah. And it must be very fun to re-engage with that, with a kid.
Is he
so stoked?
Well, he's all of it, you know. The kids tend to show you all of it, from the very stoked to the not stoked at all, and everything in between. It's great though. It brings it's a good excuse to let out my own inner child, and we all know there's plenty of that. Or maybe there we don't, but I know there's plenty of that, by golly.
I know. I mean, I still have an amazing photo of you when we were in Wyoming, I think, in that like baseball sized jawbreaker, and you licked on it and licked on it for like 5 days straight, and your tongue was bleeding. Anyway, I have a great photo of you smiling with this jawbreaker looking like a 4-year-old.
That's right.
Yes.
Wow. Well, that's a good segue to maybe tell people a little bit about, to give people a little context as to how you and I know each other. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time we met?
Were you working at Pizza Schmitza?
Well, I did work at Pizza Schmitza, but is that where I met you?
Well, yeah, I know you worked there, but did we first meet when, like, we knew of each other and I came in and I got a slice from you, and I think maybe we were like, oh, you're that guy. Or do you remember something else?
See, I thought maybe the first time we met was at like a rehearsal or a photo session or something. Like, one of my first memories with you is at this photo session, because Dave and I played in a band together called Norfolk and Western that was headed by our mutual friend Adam Selzer and his partner at the time, Rachel Blumberg. And Dave and I were kind of the auxiliary members for, you know, for a record and a half sort of thing. We made a record and an EP as that band. And we did a lot of stuff on the road. And one of my first memories is at this photo session with you, with Karina Rep. She was taking some photos at Adam and Rachel's place. But I'm sure we must have met before then.
Oh, yes. We definitely met before that, because we had recorded together before that on the record. It's funny you mentioned Adam, Rachel, and Karina, because I've seen all three of those people in the last 2 days.
Wow.
Pretty wild. Anyway, well, before we get too into that, so Peter and I played in Norfolk and Western. I believe we must have met in 2005.
Yeah.
And that band was kind of based around Adam and Rachel, and kind of other people went in and out, but Peter and I were like a solid third and fourth member for a good spell. And you and I think both went on our very first tours with that band. Like, I had never toured before. Had you?
No, I mean, kind of, but not really. That was my first proper tour for sure. Like, a month in the van all around America.
Yeah. Like, you saw, I remember you went to New York for the very first time on that tour.
Yes.
It was really fun to see New York for the first time.
I was just
I'd only been to New York once before that.
Yeah. I was just telling somebody about that the other day, because my main memory from that first trip to New York was I just wanted to check out all the record stores, because I was an avid CD collector at that time. You might remember I had you guys all had your iPods with different, you know, all your thousands of songs, but I had this book of like CDs I would bring around with me everywhere. And, and I went to you showed me Brian Eno on that tour.
No, really?
Yes. You told me about Brian Eno. I'd heard his name before, but I didn't know who he was or what kind of music he made. And you kind of enlightened me. You played me, Another Green World, I think. And I was blown away by the mixture of different styles all in one album, you know? And we got to New York, and I went CD shopping to try and find Brian Eno CDs. And I found Discreet Music, and I put that on my Discman, my portable CD player. And I sat down on the streets of New York, and I was counting how long I could count between each car horn, and I wanted to see if I could get to 30 seconds or something, but you know, I'd get to 5 or 10 seconds and beep beep.
I love the contrast of that with Discreet Music, which Brian Eno has a discography full of very quiet albums, and that is maybe the quietest of all of them.
Yes, it is.
It's like barely there.
Right.
And I just love I love the idea of you starting with that one and trying to listen to it in New York on the street.
I know. But you did you did lead me to Brian Eno, which became such a huge influence. I kept a journal on that tour, and one of the pages, just the whole thing just says, Brian Eno is a genius. Brian Eno is a genius. Brian Eno is a genius.
Wow. Well, you know, he is.
Yeah.
God, speaking of podcasts, I don't know if you've listened to that Rick Rubin, Malcolm Gladwell podcast, Broken Record.
I've heard about it.
Yeah, it's good. Like, but there's a new episode with Brian Eno for like 90 minutes, and it is amazingly good to listen to.
Oh, great.
He just goes in on everything. Yeah, you should listen to it.
That's a good tip. Well, I have lots of great memories of you on tour. You know what's amazing, and this kind of leads to this project that we're doing, that we want to talk about, sort of. But I was blown away at the start, because I was very young at that time. I was like 17, 18 years old. You were maybe early to mid 20s, and Adam and Rachel were already in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
But I was blown away with your ability to do impressions. And
well, thanks. Somebody's got to be.
I don't want to put you on the spot right now, but just everybody should know that Dave does really good impressions of just about anybody that I can remember. But so years later, you kind of did a whole album of impressions, really. I mean, you weren't necessarily trying to mimic Paul McCartney, but you did. You decided to cover the album Ram, and I want to talk to you about specifically the song Monkberry Moon Delight.
Yes.
But just tell us how this whole project got started. Why, when, give us the rundown.
Yeah. Well, it's good timing, because that actually came out exactly 10 years ago this early summer, spring. So I've been thinking about it a lot lately. The context is, I think it was 2010. And I was still very much kind of in the world that you and I were just talking about. Like, I was playing in bands that were like kind of going for it, but not really enjoying much success, joining bands that I wasn't necessarily like a creative contributing member to, but I was playing live with them and doing these very long tours that maybe I walked home from a month with like $600 in my pocket.
Wow.
And maybe more, maybe I'm exaggerating, but not really enough to live on, but feeling good about it. I felt like I was playing music, but it started nagging at me that I wasn't creating my own music. Like, I had played on stuff, but I had not explored, like, what is this like when I actually sit down to do something? And you and I, we just talked about Adam Selzer, who was the singer of Norfolk and Western. So he had that studio Type Foundry in Portland.
Yes.
You and I had both done a lot of work. And I felt like, okay, I've spent a lot of time in the studio. I've watched Adam do some stuff. And maybe I can wrap my head a little bit around this recording stuff. So I got back from a tour and I decided that I really wanted to try recording an album on my own. But I had no songs of my own. I wasn't writing songs yet. And I felt like, okay, if I'm going to try and figure out how to write songs and record at the same time, I'm just never going to do this. And you know, what's a better idea would be to identify a record that I could learn how to record while I was recording it. And the process of recording it will actually be just an education in recording.
Yes.
And so then the criteria became like, well, what's doable? What actually has kind of a range of levels of production on it? Like, I couldn't just go out and try and make Dark Side of the Moon or something, because I just had no idea how to do any of that.
So you were looking for an album to cover.
Absolutely. Ram.
Wow.
I didn't wake up one day and be like, I love Ram so much that I'm going to record this record.
Okay. Right. Right.
But Ram was, I was kind of like into Ram at the time, and it was, it proved a strong candidate because it has songs like Heart of the Country and Dear Boy, which are just like a guitar, maybe a snare with a brush,
mm-hmm.
and then vocals. All the way up to songs like Backseat of My Car, Long-Haired Lady, that I have like an orchestra and backing vocalists and the works. And so I was like, okay, this is a good one. I'll start and I'll learn out of the simple ones. And then it gets to like things like Eat at Home that has like a full band playing on it, some guitar solos, but still nothing too crazy. And so I decided to make it Ram, and I had no...
Hang on 1 second.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for people who don't know who we're talking about, because I don't think we've mentioned yet who made Ram.
Oh, a guy named Paul McCartney, obscure British singer.
You might have heard of him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Ram, just for context, Ram was Paul's second solo album after leaving the Beatles. And yes. At the time, Paul's stock was quite low. Like, I think George and John left the Beatles and had very critically beloved initial solo records.
Right.
John made Plastic Ono Band and Imagine. They're still hailed as like these very raw, depth laden expressions of the soul.
Yeah.
George Harrison makes All Things Must Pass, like this magnum opus of all the songs he'd been storing up while John and Paul didn't let him record. That kind of thing. And then Paul just comes out and makes McCartney One, which is this like charming bedroom recorded thing. And
yes,
it's aged really well, but at the time it is not what people wanted from Paul McCartney.
Right.
So Paul decides to kind of like double down and be like, all right, I'll show you guys. And he makes Ram, which to this day still is the most Beatle-y sounding Beatle solo record of all. It's like, if by Beatles we're talking like kind of Sgt. Pepper-y, Abbey Road-y, like huge walls of backing vocals, bouncy bass lines. It's like, it's where Paul is like, you like how the Beatles sound? Well, this is why the Beatles sounded this way. It's because
okay.
of me. But at the time, Ram still got very poor reviews because people thought, and you know, with not entirely incorrectly, that the lyrics were a little trite or ridiculous, and especially when compared
Monkberry Moon Delight.
And we're going to get into the most ridiculous of all of them. So Ram comes out and it's I don't know if it was a flop, but it wasn't exactly like what people were looking for either. But time has been very kind to it. And a lot of people that know what they're talking about think of it as the best Beatles solo album there is. I don't know if I completely agree with that. I definitely think it's in the top three with Plastic Ono Band and All Things Must Pass for sure.
I was reading today, doing a bit of research, that it like, you know, the critics just tore it apart. But it still got in the top of the charts, at least in the UK. So fans were eating it up while the critics were tearing it apart. And that says a lot, I think, you know?
It does say a lot, yeah. And it sort of set the stage for Paul's solo career, honestly, because John and George got very erratic very quickly with the quality of their solo work. And both of them kind of refused to tour. Like John Lennon never toured again after the Beatles.
Oh, wow.
George. Yeah. Never. Like the last tour John Lennon did was in 1966 when the Beatles stopped touring, and he played, I think maybe like 7 shows in the rest of his life.
Whoa.
And when he was killed, he was gearing up to finally do a world tour. And then
that
obviously didn't happen. And then George also didn't tour, I think, until the mid-70s. So I love that we're just like, there's another guy named Ringo that we're not really talking about.
Well, he wasn't one of the primary songwriters.
Exactly. Yeah. But Paul very quickly was like, you know what, I'm doing this. He puts together a band, Wings, and like goes on tour. And he like, and to this day, he kind of keeps the Beatles legacy alive and plays the hits for people and sort of guards the legacy and keeps those songs alive and being played in places. So Ram like was the very early version of that template where he makes an album that fans are going to love, critics are going to hate, and he's going to play those songs live.
And he had moved out to a farm or something. And right. Cause the cover is this, I'm gonna put it on the screen here just to show people who haven't seen it. Most people would probably seen it, but the cover, you know, is him like holding this ram, the horns of this ram. And, you know, he's like out on a farm somewhere. So I had the mistaken, in Scotland, I had the mistaken notion that he had recorded this at home, like on his farm, but I guess actually he was trying to go the opposite of what he did with the first McCartney album and actually go into his studio and really flesh it out. And I thought maybe he played all the parts himself, but I was reading that no, actually he hired a lot of session players for this record.
It's funny, you are in the majority of people that believe that about Ram, and I think it's because McCartney One, very famously, he did go from being in the Beatles to just recording McCartney One in his shed in Scotland and playing everything. And then Ram has a very like home recorded feel to it. And I think the reputation of that first album just spilled over to it. But really, he recorded it in a fancy studio in New York with hired guns and was like swinging for the fences with that one.
Right.
So yeah, the truth is out.
And so you finally decided Ram is going to be the album that you're going to take on for to learn how to record as a challenge, to learn all the different parts. You know, you already were a multi-instrumentalist experimenting with all different instruments, but this must have really put your, not only instrumentally, but you're learning how to record and all that. So the whole thing was like an education of sorts for you, wasn't it?
100%. Yeah. I mean, I owe a lot of what I know about making music to the Ram project. That's why it's called the Ram project, because it ended up being a real education. It felt like a science experiment, honestly, while I was doing it.
Yeah.
So at the time I didn't have any intention for it being released or really anyone to hear it. All I did was, I set up a Tumblr blog.
Yes, I remember.
And only so I could post updates and kind of hold myself accountable to like my friend, like you were probably one of like maybe 12 people I like emailed about this thing. And I was like, I'm just going to record these songs and put them up as I finish them. And if a week goes by and you don't see a new one, you should bug me and tell me to get back on it, kind of thing.
Right.
But I set out to do it in a month, and I did it in a month. And
are you serious? It was all done in a month.
1 month.
Wow.
And that's all I did, morning till night. And what was funny was about halfway through this, people started passing it around and sharing it on Facebook. And this label in Portland, Jackpot Records, is still going and an amazing force for good in this town, got in touch. And the owner, Isaac, said something to the effect of, Ram's my favorite album of all time. I think this is an amazing thing you're doing. When you're done, I would love to put it out on vinyl.
If
I may.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what? Like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. And he's like, I'll give you a budget to mix it and,
right.
We'll put it out sometime early next year, whatever. And I was like, great, that's insane. So the stakes got higher all of a sudden. I was like, okay,
yes.
I'm making a record that someone's going to put out.
Wow.
And then, unbelievably, 1 week later, a label in Europe that you're familiar with, City Slang, also got in touch with me and said basically the same thing. We're huge McCartney fans. We think you're crazy for doing this, and we have to put it out. And so all of a sudden, I had worldwide distribution and and a budget. And it didn't really affect the process, but it just made me, I think I would have finished it otherwise, but this made me realize like, oh, I have to finish this. And I have to do a really good job. And so that's what happened. And a month later, I think literally 31 days later, it was done.
Now I remember coming over to your house to visit while you were working on this. And for some reason, the song Monkberry Moon Delight is burned in my head. And I think it must be because I stopped by one day while you were working on that song.
I remember this. Yes.
Yes. And I was, you know, it's funny for me because I didn't grow up with the Beatles like so many did. So many people grew up hearing the Beatles. And by the time they're in their 20s, they know every side project and solo album inside out. And, I kind of only in the last decade, 15 years, have started to listen more to the Beatles. It's not that I wasn't interested. It just never was sort of around me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I had no idea even that this album even existed in the first place. And then you're playing me, you know, you'd play me some of the songs, and I was kind of, well, I was blown away by the difference between just, you know, the different types of songs on that album and the way it would shift from, you know, a folky number to something like Monkberry Moon Delight, which is like kind of funky rock. What is it?
Yeah, it sounds almost like an old vaudeville number mixed right. with totally funky.
Yeah.
Mixed with like his screaming voice from Helter Skelter.
Yes. Yes.
It's like
and I just remember you, because the song kind of, it goes for a couple minutes, and then like it's like half the song is a jam out at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And exactly. I just remember you trying to learn all of his Monkberry Moon Delight, you know, all his the little subtleties of his wailing, improvised, yes. obviously, for him.
Yes.
But you're yes. trying to learn that improvisation.
Not only that, but all of his bass fills, all of the little yes. guitar fills,
yes.
which obviously was just jamming out, like you said, and people mm-hmm. kind of putting fills in there. But I was like, well, the point of this project is to cover this album exactly. And so I need to learn all these things. So I was listening to the song like 8 seconds at a time.
Yeah.
And like overdubbing and punching in these little bits. It was... The whole album was incredibly painstaking, but maybe that process was the most painstaking part of the whole album, was the end of Monkberry Moon Delight.
Yeah. And yeah, one of the reasons I really wanted to get you on this little show to talk about it is because, you know, I had this idea, let's do a show that's like each one is centered around one song, and to sort of try to explore like what the essence of a song is, because the song gets covered by different people and morphed into a different thing. Even the artist who wrote it might drastically change the way they play the song over time. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, what, sometimes it's, you can't even really tell what is the actual song. Sure. You might have words and chords, but sometimes the chords even change. And I mean, I guess when you start to change words too much, then it does become something different. But even as I was looking up different versions of Monkberry Moon Delight that have been played over the years, people change the words here and there all the time and still call it the same song.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. Like I sat in the attic with the piano up my nose and the wind or the moon
played the wind played a dreadful cantata.
The wind played a dreadful cantata. Now I found another version where a guy says the wind played a tranquil cantata.
What?
And this is, it's a guy called Screaming Jay Hawkins. Have you ever heard of him?
Oh yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
His cover is awesome. Yes.
Well, Screaming Jay is like a force of nature. I, the song I know of his most is the one he does. Bump, 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 bump. I put a spell on you.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But listen to this for a sec, Dave, if I can get this going. Cantata. I mean, that changes the meaning entirely, but I guess it doesn't matter.
You know, it's funny. If you listen to mine, I got the words wrong too. I say a piano at my nose.
And he says a piano up my nose?
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, I think, and I messed something else up. Like when I recorded this, the internet existed, but there was no like genius.com or any lyrics online. It was
right.
just like mistranscribed stuff. I bet Screaming Jay just heard it that way.
That's
and
right.
Sang it or like, and I actually get a lot of lyrics wrong on this album. In fact, the very first lyric on Too Many People, which opens the album, Paul goes, piece of cake, piece of cake. I didn't know that. I just went like, piece of cake, or something like that. And later on, which is like, I totally missed the point. I messed it up, but whatever. It gets it across. But
well, that's the thing. And I remember as a kid singing along to my favorite like Nirvana song or whatever. And I would just make up words. Like I would just sing complete nonsense that was what I heard. And yeah, I mean, you might have fans at a show out there singing along and they're singing your song, but it's like completely the wrong words. And does it matter? I don't know. But yeah, I just thought that it was really interesting to think of this project in that you weren't trying to make these songs necessarily a part of your own expression. It was more like an exercise in mimicry, in a sense.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
any deviation from the way Ram sounded was a failure in this project.
Right. Like,
and there are many, but yes, the goal was to get it down, to clone it, listen to every single layer that's going on in every single song and copy them if I could and figure out what was doing them, what they were doing and do them myself, given my limited instrumental abilities and instrumental collection.
Uh-huh. Wow. I mean, the thing is you'll never be able to like fully replicate something. It's impossible, isn't it? It's an impossible task.
It's totally impossible.
And so then,
and Ram is particularly dense and murky and weirdly murky sounding too.
So then you're at this weird thing where you're like, how do you decide it's close enough? You know,
mm-hmm.
You're like, because the more you listen, the more you're going to think, well, that still doesn't sound like it. Yeah, it's really bizarre. Really bizarre.
It is bizarre. And then, even once you've recorded it, then how it's mixed, the effects, you know, the mix effects you put in, the mastering job, all of that comes into play as well.
Yeah.
But with Monkberry, I don't know, I felt, other than the voice, I think I got pretty close instrumentally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the voice is the hardest thing, obviously, because like everyone's got their own voice.
Bananas.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Paul isn't just singing like Paul on this song. He's singing like the most demented version of himself. Like he does that voice on maybe like six songs in his whole catalog. There's like Helter Skelter and Oh Darling and what else? I'm not sure off the top of my head. But then this one, and it's like no one on earth can sing that way. It's completely bananas.
Yeah.
And that's the most painful thing for me to listen to on my own version of it. It's just like I can't sing that way. I'll never be able to sing that way. But I think if I was doing it now, I would try a different approach, like maybe singing it softly. That would be interesting.
Right.
But that wasn't the point of the project. The point of the project was try to do it similar to him. So if that means just singing it in this pathetic scream that I had, then that's what I had to do.
Wow. Well, are you interested in just, because obviously this being a Paul McCartney song, it's been covered a million times. Are you interested in just getting a little taste of some different versions that might be out there, just out of curiosity?
Absolutely.
So we had Screamin' Jay Hawkins there. I don't know who this is, but who is this? Let's see.
It's
like
Russian.
Someone, a Russian.
What's wild is sounds like a Russian wedding song already.
It does. Wow. That's really bizarre. This was just some band. It looks like it's in Spanish and they're playing on the street. This one was really fast, like ska style. Yeah.
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 it's a ska tune all of a sudden.
Really well.
That works pretty good. There was one of an all-female band. Now, this I thought was an interesting version.
Rock Bitch 2019 mix. Okay.
Rock Bitch 2019 mix. That's what it says. Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa. What is going on?
Dead. So I sat in the attic, piano up my nose, and the wind played a dreadful cantata. All right, we'll just pretend like we never saw that.
Another interesting point there is that that was the only female fronted version we've heard of this, and she was singing it an octave lower than all of the men.
Yes, huh. Very interesting. There's this guy.
Look at this.
There's this guy. I don't know who he is, but he's playing a version.
1, 2, 3, 4.
That's Dave Depper.
Now there he is.
That was probably the release show. Yeah.
That guy.
Okay. I'm not going to play the whole thing because I've got something special lined up to listen to the whole song. But yeah, there's loads of versions. Here's a guy that played all the instruments himself.
This guy. Oh my God.
That one stopped there. But yeah, he kind of did the same thing you did, I guess. I even found a deconstructed version that showed all the different parts separately.
What?
Now, this would have helped you immensely. This. Yeah.
Yes. God, I love the internet sometimes.
Yeah. There's lots going on.
Where does that come from? Who got these tracks?
I don't know. I mean, some people are even able to isolate tracks by working with the frequencies of the different instruments, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know. This is probably from some, I don't know, mixing reel or something. Who knows?
Yeah.
Did you ever look into what, if any, meaning the words to this song have?
I have not. I've not read any interviews with Paul about it. He seems to never have talked about this song, as far as I know. And he has never played it live. And it's interesting. I was, Ram got reissued. Like, there was kind of I guess it would have been the 40, I don't know, some 40th anniversary version, something like that, recently, a few years ago. And he did a big interview about it. And he was talking about how he didn't really like Ram until recently because it had sold poorly and it had been panned by the critics, and that it had affected his opinion of it retroactively. And so he never played songs from it live. And he just thought of it as this failed record. And so that's why he was like, I haven't thought about these songs. I haven't listened to them. And all of a sudden there's all these like indie artists talking about how Ram is their favorite record. And
yeah.
I listened to him like, yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it? And he was just talking about how unfortunate it was that critics and like sales had affected his view of his own work in a lot of cases, but especially Ram.
Yeah.
But no, I don't know. I've not seen him talk about Monk Bear Moon Delight at all, or what it might mean. Have you unearthed anything?
I found something on a site called the Beatles Bible.
And I love that site.
God knows if this is, you know, has any merit to it, but there is a little entry on Monk Bear Moon Delight, and it says, inspired by Paul McCartney's children's use of wordplay, Monkberry Moon Delight lyrics, featured lyrics chosen more for their phonetic sound than their meaning. And apparently, Monk was what his kids used to call milk.
What?
So him and Linda had this kind of fantasy drink called Monkberry Moon Delight. Like, and he likens it to Love Potion number 9, like, you know, it's a special like little fantasy drink. So
no,
there you kidding. Go. And maybe it was like an inside joke around the family for a while, you know, like, oh, are you going to, do you want to have some Monkberry Moon Delight? So There you
go. Wow. Okay.
There was even someone in the comments here who was like, yeah, I remember Billy Budapest as a kid's pajama design.
What?
So
yeah, when I leave my pajamas to Billy Budapest.
Right.
I don't get the gist of your letter.
So, you know.
Oh my God.
While it may be nonsense, it actually may have had like a very a kind of quite deep personal meaning to him, because those sort of inside jokes in your family, those are the kinds of things you think about when you're like alone somewhere and you're feeling nostalgic or something. You think about how mm-hmm. you used to call milk monk. And it's interesting. I just thought that was interesting.
It's totally interesting. Never before have such nonsense lyrics been delivered with such blood-curdling intensity either.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's funny in the universe of rock criticism and the reputation of John and Paul, like there's some truth to this, obviously. Like John gets a reputation of being the like artist, the soul searching poet, the guy expressing his raw feelings, and Paul is kind of like branded as the wacky Senate, like silly dippy guy. But John Lennon writes Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, I Am the Walrus, absolute lyrics of gobbledygook nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're celebrated as like, oh, this Lewis Carroll-esque, you know, surreal imagery worthy of British, you know, fantasy literature. And I would argue that Monk Brave Moon Delight is no more or less ridiculous or interesting or well constructed than those songs, but just because he's Paul and he's singing it in this kind of wacky way, it's just completely swept aside as like, oh, there's Paul goofing off again, you know.
That's an interesting point. I wonder if it's because John Lennon did write other songs that have a more immediate depth to them that gives sort of, you know, a special, you know, it doesn't then derail him if he does write nonsense, because he gives you the depth, you know, like in a song like Imagine, or, you know, any number of Beatles tunes as well.
That is a good point. Yeah.
But
he does get to fall back on that.
But I'm a great believer in that, you know, nonsense can be full of depth. You don't have to like articulate something in a super, you know, just poignant way to create something with depth and with meaning. Like, you know, I think there's plenty of people who feel deeply impacted by Paul's work in the Beatles. It's so funny, just the like, it always ends up in this conversation of like, who like, what was Paul's role against John's role and Ringo and George? Like, they're always kind of compared against each other. Like, what a nightmare. What a nightmare for them. It's like,
I know,
just four dudes who wanted to make some music together.
It's true, but it just speaks to the like inseparable alchemy of their contributions to that band. You just can't have one without the other. And
that's right.
They all went on to do interesting stuff, and I love every, you know, a lot of what they did afterwards, but there is just a particular thing that they had that they spent the rest of their lives trying to capture and kind of never could.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
that's it, man, rules.
Yeah. I want to listen to Monkberry Moon Delight. And I was thinking about this because, you know, this podcast is like, I'm not doing any advertising or anything. There's no money involved with it. But still, I wonder sometimes about copyright issues. And most of the episodes I'm doing are with the artist who wrote the song, so it's not an issue to put the song in there. But in this case, I imagine Paul McCartney has like, you know, a pack of hounds that come running after anyone that, you know, uses his music in something. So I thought, well, maybe there's a way I can get around it. And I thought, what if I try and make a mashup version that alternates between the original and Dave's version every bar?
I love it. And that'll fool those digital hunters.
We'll see. And it also, it's just perfect for this project because you did try to replicate as closely as possible. And so in theory, it should kind of be possible, right?
Yeah.
Now,
in theory, it should.
You have to forgive me because it's a very crude edit. You know, there's when you have other projects in a family, there's a limited amount of time that you can spend on things like this. But I did make it all the way through. I want to play it. I want to just draw attention to what blew my mind the most was at the very end when it's jamming out. And just as it's starting to fade out, the bass line is just going all over the place. And
it was crazy.
The continuity in the wacky bass line cutting from bar to bar between your version of his. If you listen to just the bass, you wouldn't even know it's cutting to a different version, which I just thought was incredible.
That may be a reveal on the fact that the only instrument I was truly confident on at the time was the bass guitar.
Right. Wow. Okay, man, are you ready for the Monkberry mashup?
Yeah, I can't believe this. Let's do it,
Dave.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. That, I don't know, man. That edit worked pretty well, I have to say.
There's a few spots in there where I didn't like quite get on the beat, but you know, it's close enough.
Yeah, I guess they weren't on the grid back there in New York back
yeah.
in the
day. Yeah, I noticed, especially at God, the end that... of the song, his version was kind of like speeding up, whereas yeah. yours was probably yeah. recorded to a grid.
Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely. Man, God, so many things to love about that song. I think my favorite part is that part at the end where he goes, "Try some of this, honey."
What is it?
My dream is alive.
Yeah, and we have to also mention that, you know, of course, this album, we've been talking about it like a Paul McCartney solo album, but it is originally credited to Paul McCartney and Linda McCartney. Right?
Only album thus credited.
Yes. And one detail I love about this project is that you kind of replicated the artwork as well. And that was done by your partner at the time. We should give a shout out to Joan here.
Yes.
For
Joan
doing this. Right?
Yeah, it's she did an amazing job. Yeah, and she sang all the backing vocals on the record, exactly. Just like Linda.
In the spirit yeah. of the and project. Look at those side definitely. By side. So for those who can't see,
she did it.
Yeah, she replicated the cover and painted Dave where Paul would be, and there's horns around Dave's cat or a cat instead of a ram. And
that was the late great Captain Fantasy who was my cat until a couple years ago. But I love having him memorialized on that album cover. It's pretty awesome.
Absolutely, the captain.
But she did the back cover. She did the insert. It looks exactly like Ram. And she did, like Linda McCartney, Joan is not a trained singer, and there's kind of like a very lovable amateur quality to her voice, which is like totally on pitch and sounds great, but it's like Linda didn't sound like a hired backing vocalist and neither did Joan, and I love that about both of the records.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Damn, Dave.
Well, damn.
Is there anything else we need to know about Monkberry Moon Delight?
Well, I was curious if in your searching of covers you came across the album Thrillington. Did this come up?
No, I can look it up right now though.
So this is a very interesting thing to know about Ram in particular is in, I believe, 1977, for reasons that I'm not familiar with, Paul McCartney had all of Ram arranged for big band and.
Oh yes. Like instrumental versions.
There's like a weird Muzak instrumental version of Ram called Percy Thrills Thrillington Plays Ram. And
yeah,
the Monkberry Moon Delight on it is amazing sounding. Like it's like the best thing. Like the whole album is really cool, but Monkberry Moon Delight is just this swaggering, huge sounding thing on it. It's cool.
Well, I found it. So I'll play a quick snippet of it. I probably can't play the whole thing, but people can go check it out. If they want to,
it's see. Cool. It's like slower and just got a. Turning up.
What?
Yeah, it's like a James Bond theme.
Okay, that's it's awesome. Cool. I'm going to stop it there just so I don't get, so that I'm able to actually air this whole episode.
Yes.
Wow, I'm going to go listen to that directly when we're done here. But yeah, and of course, you know, anyone who hasn't heard the original song or your version can find those wherever. Have you got, like a Bandcamp page with all that stuff? Something like that, or the record label
anywhere in 2020 one, you like to hear music, you can hear that Bandcamp.
Oh, yeah.
Streaming services. The vinyl is still available.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure they're sitting on 8,000 of them at Jackpot Records HQ.
Cool.
Yeah, it's out there.
And yeah, just to close up, maybe like what are you working on now? Like, you just released like a record of kind of instrumental guitar soundscape stuff, right? Just recently.
Yeah. So I guess in January, I think I released a record called Europa. And it's all, speaking of Brian Eno, I set out to make an album that was kind of influenced by Robert Fripp and Brian Eno's recordings they made together in the '70s. If listeners haven't heard these albums, there's two records called, one's No Pussyfooting and one is Evening Star.
Yeah.
And all they are is Brian Eno set up this looping reel to reel system and a pedal board, and Robert Fripp just played these swelling guitar sounds into it that loop and make these really gorgeous kind of waves of pleasing sound. And I've always loved those records so much. And I was on tour with Death Cab for Cutie in 2015. I guess we haven't said that band name this entire podcast.
That's right.
Band.
Yeah, that's right.
And, I was on tour in Europe with them in 2015, and I was looking for a way to not be sitting around doing nothing all the time in these venues we were playing. Because there's kind of a part of time each day where you can't really leave because you might need to like do something on stage and sound check or whatever, but there's nothing to do yet. And so each day in these venues, I see my little recording doobob and just improvise for like a half hour to an hour. And so I recorded stuff in Glasgow, Munich, Copenhagen, you know, all these places we played. And then I sat on it for like 5 years. And when the pandemic happened, I was like, okay, well, I've got like 10 hours of this stuff. Maybe it's time to sift through and see what I got. And I whittled it down to an hour of stuff and put it out in January. And I'm very proud of it.
Great. I need to get my hands on a copy of that.
I remember
hearing some of this stuff when you first did it. I think maybe it was the other, because you did another record. It was kind of from some of those same type of sessions, right? Was it Utrecht?
It was called Utrecht Suite. Yeah. So that was the exact same time that it was recorded. But we played Utrecht the day after that terrible attack in Paris on the Bataclan Club.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was the day after that happened, and the stuff I recorded that day had this very like mournful, sad quality to it, and I decided it was kind of its own little piece. So I released it as a one-off and donated the proceeds to some charity at the time was benefiting them. I don't remember which one, but it was a long time ago. Anyway, so you would have heard that similar stuff.
Very cool. That's a cool thing.
Funnily enough, I've actually.
Sorry.
Oh no, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I want you're the guest. I want you to speak.
Well, I was gonna change the subject and say I've just covered another album in its entirety actually, which is quite apropos to this podcast.
What?
But I can't tell you what it is yet.
Oh. Okay.
And this was actually, I think I'm announcing it in a month or so, and so maybe after you hit stop, I'll tell you more about it. But
okay,
I was commissioned. There's a record label in Seattle that just has people record full length records by other artists, and they commissioned me to do one. And I'm very excited about this one. And it was also not an attempt to exactly replicate this album.
Okay,
do my own thing to it. That's all you get to know.
Very cool.
And then Death Cab in 4 days, we're going on a tour.
Holy cow.
I know.
Great. It's crazy. Yeah, this is late August 2021, where tours have been rather unheard of for the last year and a half. Well, I hope that works out for you, Dave.
Well, you know, by the time this airs, I think we'll know more about how it went. But that's my world right now. That's what I'm doing.
Well, if you make it to Ireland, you better let me know.
Oh, God, of course.
Or maybe I'll just see you running on the streets of Glasgow again. That was one of the last times I saw you, is you were just running down the street. And I was like, hey, I think I kind of scared you.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was, I was just like in the zone. Yeah, last time Peter and I saw each other, I think it was 2018, probably, maybe 2019. I was in Glasgow. I was running. We were playing the next day and we had a day off. And this guy is just like waving his arms and screaming at me. And I was like, is that fucking Peter Broderick?
Yeah.
And then not only was he also there randomly, but our friend Corey, who was also in the band Norfolk and Western with us.
That's right.
Was playing a show in Glasgow that night. And so Peter and I went and saw our friend, and it was like this triple coincidence of unearthly magnitude.
That's right. That was so cool.
I hope that happens again.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for agreeing to do this. Long live the Ram.
Long live the Ram, yeah. Get into it, people. Ram on.
Ram on.